And we're holding on Yod Amud Aleph, the fifth line. We learned yesterday about a case, about a couple of cases where a person says an Eidos, and we say we can accept part of it and not another part of it. First, we have the case, well, we have the case of Pliny Revoil Oinsoi, where a person comes to Beis Din and says that that Pliny committed Mishkav Zachor with me against my will. So the person who's coming and giving the Eidos is not thereby making himself a Rasha because he's saying it was Ba'onis. So he can be one aid. And if you have another aid, then good. We get the guy executed and that's that. Then we had a case where he says, Pliny Revoil L'Ritzonoi, where he says that it was consensual. So now, first Rabbi Yosef had said that that means he's a Rasha and he can't be an aid, so therefore there's no Eidos over here. Rava had said no, since Odom Korov Eitzel Atzmo, since a person is his own closest relative, he can't give Eidos on himself. Then we say, Ein Odom Meisim Atzmo Rasha, we say that he can't make himself a Rasha with his Eidos, so therefore we ignore the part that he's saying that it was L'Ritzonoi, and we focus on the fact that he's saying that Pliny did the Savera, and therefore he would be one aid, and there can still be another aid with him. We call it Palginin. We call it that we divide up what he said. We call it that we divide up what he said, and we accept part of it and we reject part of it.
And we can believe the
We
fact that
believe the fact that there was Pliny
he has no
Revoy
credit.
as long as there's another aid, but we ignore the fact that it was L'Ritzonoi, because that would be that's giving Eidos on himself, and he can't do that.
But we're going to get killed. He's going to
So
tell
the
him.
other no. So that's the thing on himself. He's not going to get himself killed because you would need two. For that, you would need two aidim that it was that he did it willingly, and you only have one aid for that because he himself no. So for the for so you don't so you have one other aid for that. You have an aid
Right.
that he that it was willing, but for himself to say that it was willing on himself, we don't believe that. So therefore, we only have one aid that
Point.
it was him who was willing, and we have two aidim that it was the other guy. So therefore, therefore the other guy is getting killed.
And there's already, you don't know why the mixers can make them
It's
split.
not a matter of motive mixtus.
Okay.
That would be in dinim momenes, yeah. Then we had another din where a similar kind of thing with a guy's wife, where somebody comes to Beis Din and says, Pliny Baal Ishti. Then we say we can't use that as evidence to he can't be one of the two Edim to have her convicted, because again, we say Palginin Dibura. And the point was that we said that the reason why Rava had to tell us that is because otherwise we would think that we say Odom Korov Eitzel Atzmai only for himself, not necessarily for his wife. Now, to be sure, of course, we know from later in the Masechta, a person can't testify on his wife. Nevertheless, though, we would have said that we don't say Palginin Dibura on that. We talked about yesterday that there are actually several explanations of Rishonim about what the point of that is, given that a person can't say Eidos about his wife, then what's the Chiddush? So Rashi had made the point that to say Palginin Dibura, we wouldn't necessarily apply that to his wife. Yes, of course, he can't come to Beis Din and say Eidos about his wife just by itself, because that he's her relative, they're married. But you would think that maybe we don't apply that to Palginin Dibura, and therefore Rava tells us that in fact we do. And therefore we say that we throw out the part of the Eidos as it applies to his wife, and we focus only on the part of the Eidos as it applies to the other guy who's not a relative.
So I can get punished another
So therefore, so only he's
basis.
going to get punished, not she. But then we talked about yesterday that there are a few other explanations of Rishonim, what exact, which is also going to affect the next piece of Gemara over here, about what Rava's point is. One point, the Yad Rama had made a point that for one thing, once she's Mizana, she's also to him. Maybe they're not considered, maybe the Gemara thought, maybe they're not considered related anymore. And the answer is no, they are, because until they get divorced, then they're still related. And then there was a point also that there was a point also there's a number of Rishonim bring a point of the Ravid that in what we basically the Gemara had thought that it would be that it would be Eidos that it would be Eidos, and we would say once part of the Eidos is bottled then all of it is bottled Eidos shebotla miktsasa botla kula, and we're saying that no, it's not actually even considered Eidos at all. That because ishtek gufo, it's not even considered Eidos at all, and therefore, yes, we're able to say Palginin Dibura. Had we considered it actual Eidos on his wife, then we wouldn't be able to say that. But because we're saying that, because we're saying it's not really Eidos at all, because what a person's saying about himself, or in this case about his wife, is not considered Eidos at all, then therefore we don't have a problem with Palginin Dibura to say that we're accepting the Eidos part and we're ignoring the part which is not Eidos, namely the part about his wife. So V'omer Rava. So Rava continues in the same vein. Pliny Baal Naira Hamayrasa. Suppose a person comes to Beis Din and says that Pliny had relations with a Naira Hamayrasa. Now, if true, that again, if there's another aid and then and everything checks out, then it means that there's skila involved. We're going to learn later on in the Masechta that the basic punishment for an Eishes Ish who's mezaneh, and of course, an Naira is already an Eishes Ish because kedushin has already happened. The basic punishment by default is chenek, but then you have there's a with a Naira Marosa, it's skila.
Cain's daughter.
Where a Kohen's daughter was a separate case. There you have Srefa, and we're going to learn in later on in the Masechta. We're going to learn in the fifth perek of our Masechta. We're going to have a discussion about under what circumstances does the Kohen's daughter get Srefa. In any case, but here we're dealing with that again. There would be a chiyuv misa over here. There would be skila. So v'huzmu, if now those edim end up being shown to be edim zomimin, then they get executed because they intended to get the boil and the naira killed, so therefore they get killed. However, they are not paying money. Now you think about it. Another point is this naira marosa would also be forfeiting her ksuba. But the fact is, in this case, though, they didn't mention a particular girl. They said that Ploni had relations with a Naira Marosa without identifying her by name. Now, later on, the Yad Rama points out, as they go through the cross-examination, eventually it's going to come out, but they didn't come to Beis Din specifically to testify about her. They were coming to testify about him. So now you can't say, therefore, so you can't say there's any particular woman that they were intending to cause her to forfeit her ksuba. So in other words, it's not even a matter of kum le bedrabimine. It's a matter of, as the Gemara is going to go on to say, in other cases, if they identified the girl, they would be paying. We wouldn't say kum le bedrabimine because the mammon and the nefoshes come from two different things, like we talked about yesterday, as we'll talk about in a minute. But the point is that in this case, because they didn't identify the naira, then therefore there's not. Therefore, we don't. Even if later on we figure out from their testimony which girl it is, nevertheless, we don't make them pay the fact that she would have forfeited her ksuba. By the way, Rashi points out when we talk about paying the ksuba anyhow, we don't necessarily mean the full value of the ksuba. We're going to learn in Masechta Makos, Be'ez Hashem, a few months from now, that in general, whenever there's a case involving Edim Zomimin and there's a ksuba involved, we don't say they have to pay the whole amount, because when you think about it, the ksuba is not necessarily a guaranteed payment anyhow. It depends, of course, whether the husband divorces her or whether he dies before her or whether she dies before him. It's not a guarantee that there's always going to be a ksuba payout. So instead, we do what's called tovas hanah. We figure out basically the future, like doing the stock market or whatever, the future value, the expected future value of that ksuba. So you figure out, for example, what's her age, what's his age, what's their health status, what's the status of their marriage or whatever, and therefore, like you develop kind of like a you figure out what are the odds, what's the likelihood that this ksuba is going to be paid out in the near future versus that it's going to be paid out only many, many years from now versus that it may not even be paid out at all, and based in figures that accordingly, and then the edim would pay that amount. So in this case, again, we're saying because they didn't identify her, then there's no payment at all. But that's in principle, as we're going to have in the next case over here, had it been that there was going to be a payout, then that would be the payout. It wouldn't necessarily be the entire 200 zuz or whatever the value is of the ksuba, but rather it would be based on that kind of calculation.
So, what basis is she being punished if it doesn't say, they don't say, the witnesses don't say name?
That's what we're saying. She's not being punished. We're saying Nehrogin, the Edim, are being, because they wanted, if nothing else, they wanted the boil to be killed. Even if they didn't identify her, they identified him, and they were trying to get him killed, so therefore they're getting Vasisim like Kasha's Noman.
Right, but in other words, if he let's say, with a girl that wasn't on Amarasa, then they wouldn't get killed.
Right. So we're talking about that. Let's say they identify to Beis Din enough information to know that this girl is definitely a Naira Marosa, and they gave him, and they say we gave him Asra and the whole nine yards.
Yeah.
But they're saying they didn't identify the girl particularly. On the other hand, continues Rava, Bite Shoploni. On the other hand, if they did identify the girl, she's Ploni's daughter, Vahuzmu, and then they turn out to be Edim Zemin, Nehrogin, then they're getting killed and they're paying money because, again, the fact that they were going to cause her to forfeit her ksuba. And why are they doing that? Why don't we say kum libe d'rabimine, mamon lazeh, and because there are two different chiyuvim. The money is for the fact that they were trying to get her and her boil killed. The money is for the fact that they were trying to for that the money, because she's a naira, it would have gone to her father. because she's only a Naira, and therefore she's a Naira Mairasa, she's still under the Rashus of her father. So therefore, so the Mumin is to one person, the Nefashis is to another. And in that case, in that kind of case, we don't say Kom Lebedirabamine. So in that case, she would in fact, they would in fact be Chayev to be paying both of them. Now we had the case before. We had the case on Tesal Amud Beis where Rabbi Yosef had said about a case where in a case we had an on Mishnah, the case of Motzi Shemra, where the husband claims that his wife had been unfaithful during the Eirusin, where if true, again she's getting Skila, and if false, if it turns out that his Edom are Zomimin, then he's getting Malkus and he's paying 100 Sela. So there we actually talked about a case. Rabbi Yosef had pointed out over there that there you have a case that the Edom of the husband are getting killed, but they're not paying money. And then on the other hand, because again, kom libidabamine. On the other hand, if the father is Edim that are trying to defend the woman, turn out to be Edim Zemin, then they are paying money because mom and lazer and a foshas lazer. So similar kind of thing to over here. So Rashi points out that Rava is not disagreeing with Rabbi Yosef's second case over there, or his first case rather, where he says that they don't pay money. Because over there, once she's already, we're talking about she's already married, the husband comes with the claim of Motzi Shemra after they're already married. They did the nisuin. Then he comes the next day to Beis Din and says lematzasi lebitcha b'sulim. So at that point, then so the ksuba payment would have been directly to her. She's not under her father's rishus anymore. As opposed to over here, we're talking about she's still under her father's rishus, being that still during the Eirusin.
You can't say the father will yashon her.
The father might well yashon her, but that's not the point. The point is well, that's the point. In other words, so therefore, in this case, the mumen is being is would the mumen had she been found guilty, then her father would forfeit the ksuba payment that otherwise would have gone to her. In other words, had she died during those erusin. Now, b'chlal, there isn't necessarily always a ksuba during the erusin. Anyhow, usually the ksuba takes effect only by the nisuin. But as the Gemara talks about in ksubas and sporadically in other places throughout Shas, there are places where there is a ksuba that's made to take effect during the Eirusin as well. So had she died at that point, yeah, her father would yashin huksuba. But now that there were Edim Zomim involved, then we're saying they're gonna have to pay him. But again, the point that Rashi is making is that unlike in Rabbi Yosef's earlier case, where we're saying that they're not paying money in the, because kom libidabamine, the difference is over there that there the money would have gone to her, and the nefashis is also her. They're trying to that the husband is trying to get her killed with his agent. Okay. Next, va'amar Rava. Rava says here's another case. Pliny Rava Hasher. Similarly, a person comes to Beis Din and says that Pliny committed bestiality with a shur. Again, he doesn't identify whose shur it is, just a shur. Vahuzmu, and then turn that again. He and somebody else are coming to Beis Din and saying that, and then it comes out that they're Vahuzmu, it comes out they're Edim Zomim, Neherogen Vein Meshalman Momin. So again, we kill them because they were trying to get this guy killed for committing bestiality. The animal would also be killed, as we're going to talk about later in the Masechta. But anyway, however, they're not paying mammon to the owner of the shur, because again, we don't know necessarily who the owner of that shur is that they should be paying. On the other hand, if they do identify whose shur it was, and then they're found to be Edim Zomim, Neharogen u'mashalmin mammon, then again they get executed, and they're also paying to the owner of the shur, whom they were trying to deprive of his shur. The shur would have gotten skila as well. Because again, mammon lazer, nefashas lazer, because again, the mammon and the nefashas are two different people. The mammon is to the owner of the shur, the nefashas is the person they were accusing of committing bestiality with it. So the Gemara asks, "Ha tu lomali?" Now, why does Rava need to tell us that case? Hainu hach, isn't that basically the case as the isn't that basically the same as Rava's earlier case about Baal Ishti, where we're saying that the case of the Naira Ma'irasa rather, where we're saying Mom and Lazer and Nefashas Lazer, because the Mom and the Nefashas go to two different people. The answer is. The answer is mishum de kaboy boya ilave. You're right. Rava didn't really need to say this case involving the shur. There's not a chiddush in that, but he's only using it as an introduction to his next question, which is deboy Rava. Namely, Rava wants to know. Pliny Rava shuri mahu. What about if he comes to Beis Din and says that Pliny committed bestiality with my shur? which is similar to Baal Ishti from the top of the Amud. So now, miyam minin odom korov etzel atzma ve'ein odom korov etzel mamonoi. Do we say, sure, we can say that when it comes to his wife, we throw out the part of the Eidos where he said that his wife was involved because we say that he can't, that he's, because we say that he and his wife are close relatives, and therefore that part of his Eidos we ignore. So would we say that over there? But we don't say that by his mamon. His shur is his mamon, so therefore he could testify on something involving his shur. Oiduma on minin odom korov etzel mamonoi. Or maybe we say that he is considered a korev to his money as well, and again we're going to have to do palgin dibura over here, so therefore so we're going to have to so we're going to have to say so if we were to say that we can't say palgin dibura, then again we're going to have to say we can't accept the part of the edus as far as it's sure, so therefore he's not going to be getting the payment as well. So what happens there? So the Gemara says, "Bosa de boya hoda poshta." After Rava asked the question, he then answered it. The answer is that no, Adam korov etzel atzmei vein Adam korov etzel mamonoi. No, indeed, he is considered only a relative to himself or to his wife, but not to his mamon. So as far as this palgin and dibura, so therefore, in fact, the shur. So if in fact the edus was true, then yes, the shur is getting skila. The point of the question was, is the shur getting skila? No, we're talking about before there was Edim Zomimin. So he comes to Beis Din. He comes to Beis Din testifying that Pliny committed bestiality with his shur. You have another aid together, then we're going to have that guy is going to get killed and the shur is going to get killed as well. The question is, do we believe him as far as the shur getting killed? The question wasn't so much as far as Edim Zomimin in this case. And like at the top of the Amud, Rava had asked the question, Pliny Baal Ishti, or made a statement, Pliny Baal Ishti, that if he says Pliny was Mizana with my wife, then we said the part about his wife we ignore because Palgin and Dibura, because he's considered her relative, Adam Karav Eitzel Atzmai, and the part about the other person we accept, and therefore that other guy can get executed. So now the question was, does the same rule apply to the shur? And the answer is no, it's different by the shur. We don't say Odom Korov Eitzel Mamonoi, therefore he isn't, therefore the shur will get executed based on his own testimony. So in other words, exactly that. If he comes to Beis Din together with somebody else and says my shur is chayiv misa, we will have that shur executed. We're not going to say that he's considered korev relative to his mamon.
But he gets paid for the accident.
No, well, how's he getting paid? He himself came to Beis Din together with somebody else and says that this ox did something that makes Chayiv Misa. The person who did it to him. No, he's no. So that other person is going to get executed based on his testimony. And then yeah, Kashrus Kamla B'Davim is going to prevent him from getting from having to pay. Yeah. So now, when we talked about before that there were a few explanations of Rishonim about the part with his wife, about what we mean when we say Odom Korov Etzel Atzmai, and therefore we throw out that part of the edus. Do we mean, in other words, that we said that there wasn't a chiddush in what Rava said as far as that he can't testify on his wife, but the chiddush was that we say palgin and dibura to say such a thing about his wife? So then here it would be a similar kind of thing. So first of all, actually, Rashi points out like this. Rashi points out that we have a case where a person comes to Beis Din and says that his shur is chayev skila. So then you have a case over there where it doesn't get skila. However, it is also as a korban. That's talking about where either he didn't give edus about who it was that committed bestiality with it b'chalal. So we can't give skila at all because we need a person to be convicted in Beis Din as well in order for the shur to be chayev skila. Or there could be, or there was only one aid. So therefore, nevertheless, the fact that there's one aid that the shur committed bestiality or killed somebody or whatever and is chayev skila is enough to make it also as a korban, but here we're talking about as far as the shur itself getting skila. Anyway, so again, so Rashi is explaining that the same way as Pliny Baal Ishti, we said for yes, Odom Korov Eitzel Atzmai, and the question was Odom Korov Eitzel Mamonoi. Again, you have similar, that you're going to have the different explanations of Rishonim about the question before with Ishtoi, which is now also going to affect what the question was and what the answer is over here as far as the shur.
Similar to like the case where it was
so the question was, in other words, basically, do we say Odom Korov Eitzel Mamonoi? So according to Rashi, the point was whether Odom Korov Eitzel Mamonoi, and therefore, do we say Palgin and Dibura? And the answer is that by the shur, we don't say Odom Korov Eitzel Mamonoi. There's no need for Palgin and Dibura. We're going to say the other guy is Chayiv Misa, and the shur is also going to be Chayiv Misa. On the other hand, the Yad Rama explains, and again, that what we mean is, in other words, that do we say that he's not believed bechlal to give edus on it? So where hoidos bal din kmei edim, then he could be mechayev himself. But here we're talking about his shur. Maybe that wouldn't work, or maybe we would say that not. And then you have then you have also, we talked about before, the shitta of the Raived. The Raived again was saying, in the case of the wife, that the point was, we're saying, the question was, is it Bechlau considered Eidos? If we considered it Eidos, then maybe Eidos should bottle Mektsasa, bottle Kula. We would say once part of the Eidos is bottle, all of it is bottle. And the answer was no. In the case of the wife, we're saying it's not, the part that he says about his wife is Bechlau not even considered an Eidos. Well, then in the same vein over here, we would be asking the question, sure, we would say that he can't say Eidos on his own mammon, but the question is whether we would say therefore that whether we would say therefore that we have to throw out his that part of the Eidos as far as his mammon, and then maybe Eidos Shabbat Mitzvah Batla Kula, and we would say that no, maybe it's not considered Eidos Bechlal, and therefore we can accept the part of the Eidos as far as the other guy. So then, in fact, actually, according to that, it comes out. Now, according to that explanation, it comes out the din would be much different than we said. According to Rashi's and the Yad Rama's explanations, it comes out the shur is getting killed because he said, after all, that the shur was involved in an act of revia. It's his shur. It doesn't matter. A person is not korav etzem amoneh, and he's able to give edus on it. According to the Raivad's understanding, fakert, we would say that einonim korav etzem amoneh, it means, in other words, there is edus over here. However, the edus is however the edus is on his own mammon, and he can't do that. And the result was that the result would be, according to that the show would not get skilla.
Like the case of the wife.
So in the case of the wife, she's right. In the case of the wife, the Gemara had said that we ignore the part about the wife altogether because we say that it's not considered Eidos at all. Here we would say it is considered Eidos. However, it's Eidos about his own mammon, which according to the Raivad's understanding, he can't do, and therefore the shur wouldn't be getting skilla.
It's not exactly
similar. So it's not
but...
exactly similar, but it's a similar idea, right? Okay. Fine. The Mishnah had said, going on with the Mishnah, Makus b'shloisha chula. We said that when it comes to giving Malkus, you need three dayanim, and according to Rabbi Shmuel, you need dinner, and or actually, that was Rabbi Shmuel had said you need three, and the Chachamim had said you need 23.
Difference.
Yeah. So yeah. Yeah. Yeah, that's the mission I'd said. Makas b'shloisha. No, so I do have it. Makas b'shloisha mishumer b'shmuel amru be'esem b'shloisha. The Chachamim had said, the Tanakhama had said three. They said in the name of Rabbi Shmuel they need 23 for Malkus. So the Gemara says, Menohani Mili. Where do we know, according to the Chachamim, that you need three? Omar of Hona, Omar Kra, like this. The Pasuk says, or the Pasuk describes a case where two people come to Beis Din and one of them is going to, and there's going to be Chiyuv Malkus involved. The expression in the Pasuk is, Ushfatum, and it says they come to the Dayanim, Ushfatum, and they judge them. So they means they means a plural, Mir Rabim Shnaim, so Shnaim. The Ein Beis Din Shokol, and as usual as we had from the beginning of the Masechta, you can't have an even numbered Beis Din. Therefore, you have to add another three. Harekan Shloisha, then therefore you have three. So there, that's our source for three. Why Rabbi Shmuel says 23? We're going to get to soon. Well, the Gemara asks, Elameata, by that logic, if you're telling me that any time we have a plural in the Pasuk that we darshan it as two, then what about the Pasuk continues, the Pasuk describes, they come to Beis Din, Shvatum, and they judge them, and then it continues, Vitzdiku, and they declare righteous, the innocent party, it would be maybe also Shnaim, would be another two Dayanim, Vihoshiu, and when it says they declare wicked, they declare guilty, would be another Shnaim, Harekan Shiva. Then in that case, you'd have six plus one would be seven. So maybe you should say you need seven for Malkus. And the answer is no. Hahumi Barile Kedola. Those words, Vihitzdiku and Vihoshiu, are teaching us what Ola says. We're not using them to add more dayanim. Rather, we're using them to derive a halacha regarding when we apply malchus. Namely, Da'oma'ola, Remez La'edim Zomimin Min HaTorah Min Ayin. Where is there a hint in the Torah for Edim Zomimin? The Gemara immediately interjects before we even get to answering the question, but before Ullah even answers his own question. What do you mean, Remez? What do you mean, Remez La'edim Zomimin? It says straight out, V'oksiv Kasha Zomam. The pasuk says straight out that Edim Zomimin have to be punished. Kasha Zomam Lasas Lachim. You don't need a Remez for it. It says flat out. The question is, where is there a remez that there are cases where Edim Zomim are getting malchus? Usually we say that Vasisim like Hasha Zomam, whatever it is that they plan to do to the other person,
Them.
is what's done to them. If it was Misa, then Misa, malchus, then malchus, money, then money. However, at the beginning of Masechta Makos, it discusses a few cases where we can't do to them exactly what they wanted to do to this person. The first Mishnah of Makos, for example, starts out with a case where they come to Beis Din and they give eidos that Pliny, who was assumed to be a Kohen, that his mother is actually a Grusha or a Chalutza, which means he's not a Kohen, he's a Cholol. If it turns out that they're Edim Zomim, we don't declare them instead Chalolim, even if they're Kohenim. Rather, we give them Malkus. And there's a few other cases that it describes over there in the Mishnah and Makkos where we do that. Instead of doing exactly what they wanted to do to this person, instead we're giving them Malkus. So Ola says, where is there a remez in the Torah to that concept? So dichtiv, because it says in the pasuk, v'itzdikur satzadik v'yushirus harasha. The pasuk describes two people come to Beis Din, and Beis Din declares innocent the innocent party, and they declare guilty the guilty party. And then the next pasuk continues that they give malchus. So we have to ask, what does one have to do with the other? Mishumdi, how did the pasukim flow together? On the face of it, you're talking about two people are coming to Beis Din, let's say with Dini Mominas or something. When Beis Din declares one party guilty and they have to pay, are we giving them malchus because of it? How does it flow, the second pasuk from the first one, because they declared the tzaddik to be tzaddik, and we mean tzaddik bedino, you know, we started Tanya, and the Alter Rebbe points out that the word tzaddik has two meanings. You know, you have tzaddik bedino, where a person wins a particular case, versus you have the true meaning of tzaddik. So here, that's what we mean tzaddik in the sense over here. He wins this case. But what? Because one person wins and the other one loses, therefore there's Malkus involved. Where's that coming in? Ella, no, what it means is like this. The Pasuk is hinting at the following. Suppose you have Edim who come to Beis Din testifying falsely against a person who really is a tzaddik. Again, not a tzaddik in the Tanya sense, but a tzaddik in the sense that he's innocent of having done this particular Aveira. And they come to Shiras HaTzaddik, they're coming to Beis Din and declaring that he's a Rosha, that he committed a certain Aveira. Va'osu Eide Achrini. Now, other Edim came, v'itzdikur HaTzaddik, they show that the one who was a tzaddik all along really is a tzaddik, v'shavinu lahanach rishoyim. And they demonstrate that the original Edim were rishoyim, that they testified falsely. So in other words, the flow of the pasuk is like this. Two Edim come to Beis Din, and they are falsely testifying about somebody who is, they're falsely testifying. So you have Reuven and Shimon, Edim, come to Beis Din, and they testify about Yankel, that he broke Shabbos or something, or ate Chalev or whatever it is. So now they, and he didn't. Therefore, Yankel really is a tzaddik, and they're declaring him to be a rasha. Now, two other Edim come and say, they're mazim, the original ones, Imanu Hayisim. The result is they're saying that no, the tzaddik, Yankel, really is a tzaddik all along. The tzaddik was a tzaddik. He didn't do anything wrong, or at least you don't have any edus that he did anything wrong. The Yoshir is a rasha, and we're saying you two Edim, Reuven and Shimon, are the Rishoyim, you were falsely accusing a person. So then the pasuk continues, v'hoyo im bina koisa rosha. Then we're saying that there's a case where they're given malchus. Now, given that, we know from elsewhere in the Torah that the Edim Zomim get whatever punishment they were going to give the person. Then if it was Shabbos, then we don't talk about malchus, they were giving them skila, and so forth. But when we can't do the exact punishment, and the Gemara at the beginning of Makkos explains why, for example, with the Ben Grusha or Ben Chalutza, we can't, and the various other cases that are over there, then instead we give them malchus. So in other words, the pasuk is telling us that by default, the punishment for an eid zomim is malchus. However, depending on the circumstances, that may be upgraded or downgraded, depending whether we're able to do the actual punishment that they scheme to have this guy undergo, whether mammon or misa. So the point is, the Vitziku and Virshu are teaching us about that scenario. So we don't have them available to teach us about extra dayonim that are needed to be present for the Malkus. All right, the Gemara asks, why does Ula need that? The typically Miloisana. Why doesn't Ula just say they're Chayav Malkus? Because they were Oiran Loisana Bereacha Eid Shoker. That's a lav, and in general a lav gets Malkus. And the answer is Mishum Dehavale Lav She'en Be'Maisa, because Loisana in and of itself would be a lav She'en Be'Maisa. Because they're only saying something verbally, and generally saying is not considered a maaseh. So therefore, so we wouldn't be able to give them malchus on that grounds, because we call lav she'en be'maaseh ein loikin olav, a lav she'en be'maaseh in general there's no malchus for. Rashi points out because Rashi points out from a Gemara in Makkos that said we learn it from a pasuk that mentions in connection with malchus. It says lasois, so that implies that malchus has to be something that they do, an active that a person does, an active thing. Over here, they're just saying something in Beis Din, and therefore it's not really. Therefore, it's a lot. Therefore, there's no Malkus for it. Actually, the Gemara over there in Makkos ends up pointing out that's not the source for it. There's a different source from the which we'll learn about in the Sefer Makkos a few months from now. Be'ez Hashem, from a Hekesh over there between the Dinim of Makkos and when the Torah says Loisachsim Shor B'Dishoy, the Torah says don't muzzle an ox while it's threshing the grain, which is a Maisa, and therefore we learn from that a lav has to have a Maisa in order to be Chayiv Malkus.
It's mice, the mice, what they're saying
They're saying, but that's not considered a maaseh.
that make them get someone killed.
That may be, but then therefore they're going to get killed if that happens. But the point is that we should say that there's malchus involved by default, where they say he's a ben grusha or ben chalutza, for example, that we say that there's malchus. We can't learn that from loisana b'racha eid shoker, because a lav she'en b'maaseh. Therefore, we need to resort to the limud from v'hitzdikur satzadik v'yoshira sarosha. Tosfos points out a little bit over here, some details about this. First of all, that the Gemara could have given another answer as well, because loisana bereacha id shoker can also be something that can bring them to Misa. Again, if they're testifying that he did something that would make him chayiv Misa, then they're going to be executed. As we talked about yesterday, it's when you have a lav shenitin las horas misas based in, it doesn't necessarily result in malchus. If they would, even if they give the person hasra that he's going to get malchus for it, he wouldn't necessarily, because it's misa or nothing, basically. Anyway, then Tosfos points out some other details about this, why we need this limud over here, and then the Gemara, and then Tosfos compares it with the Gemara in Makkos, which talks about the source b'chlal. Where do we know in the first place? Where's the lav for Edom Zomim to be chayev in the first place? Anyway, the point is that the point is that that so Tosfos discusses how our Gemara fits with that one over there. Fine. So the words v'itzdiku and v'hoshiu are needed for that limud, and therefore we don't have them available to teach us about the number of dayanim. Next, the Gemara says, fine. So the Gemara continues. Mishum Rabbi Shmuel Amr be'esmu shloi. Sure, the Mishnah had said that according to Rabbi Shmuel, we said that Malkus requires a Beis Din of 23. So my time is Rabbi Shmuel. Why does Rabbi Shmuel hold that? Amar Abaye asked your rosha mechayv emissus. So Abaye says because we have a gzeira shava on the word rosha from the case where a person is chayv missus based in, where, as we learned in the Mishnah, you need 23 for missus based in, as we're going to work out later on in the parrot. Well, the Mishnah already had worked out for us how we know you need 23, because basically you need a minimum of 10 dayanim who are going to be ready to declare him innocent, and another 10 who are ready to declare him guilty, and that gives us 20, and then you need a super majority, an extra majority, you need a majority of at least two to be able to convict him. So that brings us up to 22, and no even numbered based into 23. So Abaye is saying we have a gzeira shava on the word rosha from chayve misses. In the case of Malkus over here, it says when the rosha is going to be struck. In the case where a person killed and he has to, and where a person killed b'mezid and he's going to be executed by Beis Din, the pasuk says don't take a koifer, don't take a ransom to save his life, because he's a rosha and he has to be executed. So we have a gzeira shava on that word rosha. Just like the missus Beis Din has to be accomplished by a Beis Din of 23. So also over here, the Malkus, Rabbi Shmuel says, has to be done by a Beis Din of 23. Okay. Rava Omar. Rava says a different answer. You don't have to use that Gzeira Shava. Malkus bimkoim Misa Emedes. Malkus stands in place of Misa. Meaning, in other words, it actually explains, look, the person did something, the person violated what Hashem said. So he ought to die b'chlal. Hashem has rachmanos on him, and Hashem says, instead of Misa, we're going to give you Malkus instead. So in other words, in effect, it actually says, the same way as we have Dalad Misa spaced in effect, we have a fifth one, except that it doesn't result in his Misa, the Eibishter has rachmanos, and we expect that he's going to be alive at the end of it. But nevertheless, it's considered in place of Misa, and therefore, it should have the same rules as Misa. Even without the Gzeira Shava, it should have the same rules as Misa. Tosfos points out, first of all, that apparently Rava therefore is saying that he doesn't accept that Gzeira Shava on the word Rosha, because according to Abaye, we needed that. According to Rava, it sounds like we don't need it because we know it from Svara. Tosfos later on in the Masechta deals with that point and says that, yeah, Rava would say, maybe, fine, there's a Gzeira Shava, but we don't really need it. We don't really need it because we can learn this concept in another way. Anyway, then Tosfos gives a couple of other explanations of what Rava means, Malkus Tachas Misa Emedes. Tosfos, one explanation is consider Bnei Noach. We're going to talk about later on the Masechta in great detail. We're going to talk about the Sheva Mitzvos Bnei Noach and the penalties for them. A Ben Noach is over on any one of the Sheva Mitzvos Bnei Noach, he's Chayav Misa. On the other hand, with a yid, we're saying that most of the time a person is over on an avera, instead of getting misa, he's getting malchus. So in effect, what it is Hashem had rachmanos on a yid, and instead of having him be executed for any avera that he does, then instead Hashem says that in many cases he can get malchus instead. So that would be another meaning of malchus tachas misa emedes. Not like Rashi says it stands in the place of misa for the yid himself, where he ought to have gotten misa and instead it gets malchus, but rather that the ben noach in a similar case would have gotten Misa, and instead the Yid is getting Malkus. Then Tosfos says another explanation. It can happen, as the Gemara is going to discuss now, that a person gets Malkus and dies from it. So if he doesn't, then therefore we can say that it's still considered as though he went through an experience similar to Misa. Tosfos says, though, really neither of those explanations fits well with the continuation of the Gemara over here, and they prefer Rashi's explanation that was saying that the person himself, the Yid himself, ought to have gotten Misa, and the Eibishter has Rachmanos on him and transmutes it into Malkus instead. Okay. So Rava says that would be a reason why to say that you need 23 because of that logic, that Malkus instead of Misa. Omer of Achabred the Rava of Ashi, Ihochium Donalomali. Now, in that case, if you're telling me that Malkus is instead of Misa, then why do we need? In Masechta Makkos, we're going to learn about that before the person is given Malkus, they have to examine him. They have to figure out how much he's going to be able to take and still survive it. By that logic, if you're telling me Malkus is instead of Misa, and really the guy ought to have been Chayav Misa, why bother with that Umdana? Limchiyeh, you strike him as much as necessary, 39 times. V'imoyislemus, and if he dies, he dies. After all, Me'ikra Adini would have been Chayav Misa anyhow. So maybe therefore we shouldn't bother with that examination. Omalei, so Rav Ashi says, no, doesn't work. Omakro, because the pasuk says, v'nikla achicha la'inecha. The pasuk says your brother will be degraded in your sight. The context of the pasuk is saying don't give him more malchus than the amount that you're supposed to. But the point is, we also learn from it that the person himself is still achicha. He's still your fellow yid, which means that he's still alive. It has to be when you're striking is on the back of a living person. Otherwise, once he's dead, he's not achicha anymore. So it has to be that you evaluate ahead of time how many malchus he's going to get and make sure that they're going to be on the back of a living person. So therefore, you have to figure out ahead of time, is he going to be able to take all these malchus? If he's going to die halfway through, then you're not accomplishing v'nikla achicha l'aynecha. So Rav Acha says, okay, but what about this that we learn in a Braisa? Duhu lekabel estrim. Suppose that the doctors figure out that this person is going to be able to withstand 20 malchus. Now, does he get 20? No. Ein makan oisa ela makas or shtalish. When we give malchus, we give him only in a number that's divisible by 3. Because the Gemara, the Mishnah, and the Mishnah explains in Malkus that when we give the Malkus, we give 2/3 on his back and 1/3 wrapping around to his front. They use a type of whip that could curl around and hit him in the front as well. And the Gemara discusses over there, you know, when we do Malkus, the symbolic Malkus that we do on Erev Yom Kippur, we also do it in 3 different spots on the 2 shoulders and the middle of the back. But the real Malkus consisted of two thirds on his back and 1/3 reaching around to his front. The point is, therefore, that it has to be divisible by 3, and therefore, what we do is, so if they figure that he can take 20, so we don't say So we say we have to round it down to the nearest number that will be divisible by 3. For Kamahain, namely how much? Tamnisre. So he's getting 18. The question is why? Fine, it has to be divisible by 3. So give him 21. If he dies from that 21st Malchus, then fine, he'll die. Doesn't matter. After all, by your logic, Rav Ashi, you need that every blow is going to be on the back of a living person. Fine, he receives the 21st blow. He's also alive. He dies after that. So the whole point we just said, Malchus Misaimedis. So we should say we should give him 21. The 20, at the end of the 20th one, he'll still be alive. We give him the 21st one. He's alive for that, and he dies right after it. But he was alive. He was still Achicha when he received the 21st. Amalei Rav Ashi says still doesn't work. Look at that pasuk again. Your brother will be degraded in your eyes. That means after he gets malchus, we still require that he should be able to be still called achicha, that he's still alive. Veleka, and here you're not going to have it because after the 21st he'll be dead. So, in fact, by the way, in Makkos, the Gemara learned, the Mishnah learns from that point that after he gets Malchus, like this before, the Pasuk calls him a Rosha, as we said before, Yeshua is a Rosha. But now that he got his Malchus, now that he got his punishment, he's a Chicha, he's back. We welcome him back in as a fellow Yid who's our brother. Anyway, the point is that we learn from that also. He has to be a Chicha at the end of the whole thing. And therefore, so again, if he receives the 21st, in this case, he's going to die. Therefore, we have to round it down to 18 so that we have Makas or Oyas Leishtalish. So we have this number divisible by 3, and he's still alive and it's still Achicha at the end of it.
Well, you don't know they could have, because it
feels. So you don't know. The Mishnah describes over there, yes, you could have a case where they misjudged and they judged that he could take 20 and they gave him 18 and he died doing it. Fine. The Malchus was still accomplished. Nobody's Chayav Misa or Golos or whatever for killing him because they were doing it bit of shus and it was an onus. But but on the other hand, for example, if the doctor said he can take 20 and the guy over there gives him 21, And he dies, then the chazan, the shamash, or the beistin who gave the malchus is going to have to run off to the Ori Miklat because he killed somebody b'shoyeg again. We'll learn about all that in Masechta Malchus. The third parak of Malchus talks about all the dinim of malchus, so we'll have all these details over there, Be'ez Hashem. Okay. The point is, in other words, so none of this contradicts what Rava is saying, that Malchus b'mkayim misa emedes. Yes, the point is Malchus b'mkayim misa emedes, that Hashem should have by right said the person is chayiv misa, but instead he Hashem has rachmanos and says instead that the guy can get Malchus instead, but the Malchus has to be done in a way where he's going to be achicha after it's all over, where he's a fellow Yid who's still alive. Okay. Onward. The Mishnah had said, Ibur HaChodesh B'Shloisha. Here's another thing that requires a Beis Din of 3, is Ibur HaChodesh. Now the Gemara point, now Ibur HaChodesh on the face of it means, now Ibur HaChodesh can have two different meanings. It can mean declaring a month to be 30 days long, namely you have there's a Chodesh Choser of 29 days and a Chodesh Me'ubur of 30 days, or you can have declaring an Ibur Yer, declaring an extra adder.
Same word meaning both.
The same word. The word ibur basically means like an isha ubra, means a pregnant woman. So it means something that has something extra to it. So in the case of the month, it has an extra day. In the case of the year, it has an extra month. The Gemara, by the way, elsewhere points out the way it works is a month has to consider the units of which a Jewish month is made are days. Therefore, you can't have a month of 29 and a half days, for example. It has to be a complete number of days. And the units of which a Jewish year is made is months. Therefore, you have to have 12 or 13 complete months. You can't have 12 and a half or whatever months. Anyway. So the Gemara points out chishuv lo katani. Now the Mishnah had not said chishuv to calculate whether when the moon is going to be visible and to listen to the edim. Chishuv means to calculate. So when it comes to whether there's going to be a 30-day month, then you have Rashi points out there's going to be calculation involved because they're going to have to calculate whether the moon is going to be visible the night after the 29th. The normal situation is, in other words, there's a molad. A few hours later, the moon first becomes visible. Beis Din has to calculate. We have all the elaborate calculations for it in the Rambam and Hilchos Kiddush HaChodesh in the later Parakim, whether the moon is going to be visible the night following the 29th. If it is, Then Beis Din is sitting the next morning to see whether Edom come. Edom come and say, "We saw the moon last night." They declare, "Okay, Mekudesh, Mekudesh HaChodesh, the month is now Mekudesh, and now today, the 30th, is the first day of the new month, and the previous month was 29 days. On the other hand, if not, then it's going to be a 30-day month." The point is, in other words, it actually points out that there are cases that are described in Masechta Rosh Hashanah where Beis Din declares a 30-day month, even though calculation would show that the moon would have been visible. Because it actually points out, for example, Beis Din will do that. It's called Mishum Yarki or Mishum Mesaya. The Gemara describes over there, Beis Din wants to make an effort to prevent Yom Kippur from coming out on Friday or on Sunday. Which we have that rule in our fixed calendar nowadays as well, because you don't want 2 days in a row that are completely Shabbos, Yom Kippur. You can't do any melachas, so vegetables would rot during that time. You can't cook them or prepare them on Yom Kippur or on Shabbos. Dead bodies would rot because you can't bury them on either one. So Beis Din would make an effort to prevent Yom Kippur from coming out on Friday or on Sunday, and where necessary, that means they would declare a chodesh, which otherwise would have been chaser, according to calculation. They're going to declare it Ma'ober. But nevertheless, the point is, all of this requires calculations. Rashi goes on to point out that the Gemara in Erchin, now there's a number of Gemaras scattered throughout Shas that deal with these dinim of Kiddush HaChodesh. Some of them are in Masechta Rosh Hashanah, some of them are here in our Sugya, these next couple of blot, and some of them are in Masechta Erchin. Now, in Erchin in particular, it talks about there's a certain minimum and maximum number of chadashim maleim that you can have in a year. The problem is you have too many chadashim maleim. Every chodesh mole is 30 days. The actual cycle of the moon from one molad to the next is on average a little over 29 and a half days. So you're going to have too many chadashim maleim in a month. The result is eventually you're going to have the moon is going to be visible before the chodesh, and that's no good. We don't want that. So the new moon is going to be visible before Rosh Chodesh, and we don't want that. So Beis Din, even if they're going to say, fine, we need to make an extra 30-day month sometime before Rosh Hashanah to avoid the problem of Yaukia and Mesia, nevertheless, they have to calculate, well, how many Chadoshim Malayim have we had this year so far and make sure not to go over. We still need to make sure that the moon is not going to be visible before the night of the 29th.
Let's say it's supposed to be full, they can go backwards to.
So when so whether they can declare it a Chodesh Chaser, which would mean in effect to invent Edim, the Gemara discusses that point in Rosh Hashanah. It's a Machlokas. We're showing him how to understand that Gemara. But yeah, in any case, the point is the Gemara is bothered by the point when it says Ibur HaChodesh. The fact is Ibur also requires Chishuv. It also requires calculation to know whether we should make a Chodesh Malay or not. So why is the Mishnah not saying Chishuv and Kiddush like a Tani? Nor is the Mishnah using the word Kiddush, which would imply that you need three Dayanim to sit to receive the Eidim and to say Mekodesh HaChodesh. So Ela Ibur. So the Mishnah is only mentioning the word Ibur HaChodesh, which sounds like you need a Beis Din of three to say that this Chodesh is a Chodesh Me'uber, that this Chodesh is 30 days. The question is why? You don't bother being Mekadosh it, or Memela La'aber, and automatically it'll be 30 days. A Jewish month can only be 29 or 30 days. So if they don't declare it Mekudosh on the 30th day, then by default it becomes a 30-day month. So why is the Mishnah saying Ibur HaChodesh B'Shloisha, as if you need three Dayanim to sit there on the 31st day and say this previous month was a 30-day month? What for? So Omar Abaya Tony Kiddush HaChodesh. So Abaya says, fine, you have to fix up the wording of the Mishnah and say that instead of Ibur HaChodesh, it's supposed to say Kiddush HaChodesh. So in other words, the point is that when you have that, yes, you're going to have three Dayanim sit in order to hear the Edim and check it out and make sure that it agrees with the calculations and say Mekodesh HaChodesh and say this previous month was a 29-day month and today the 30th day is Rosh Chodesh and the first day of the new month. Tanya Nami Hochi, and in fact, we do learn like that in a Braisa. Kiddush HaChodesh v'Ibur HaShana v'Shloisha Dibur HaMeir, where the Meir specifies that both Kiddush HaChodesh, when Beis Din says Mekudesh HaChodesh on the 30th day, and when they say this year is an Ibur year, both of those require three. As opposed to when it comes to an Ibur year, as Reb Shimon Gamliel had said in the Mishnah, three is what you start with and you end up with seven, as we're going to talk about further down on the Amud.
What was the answer as to why you say this is going to happen, but you don't say?
So the answer is that Abaya is saying instead of Ibur, put the word Kiddush in our Mishnah. So instead you say that it means not that Beis Din has to sit on the 31st in order to say yesterday was the 30th day of the previous month, and their Shchodesh is today, the 31st, which is the first in the new month. month. You don't need that because by default, if they're not Mekadesh, then the next of the previous month was 30 days. Rather, it means that they need 30 in order to be Mekadesh the Chodesh on the 30th day, which is to say that the previous month was 29. Rava says this. The fact is, the Mishnah says the word Ibur, not Kiddush. It's one thing a Tana might make a mistake and leave out a word, Chsuri, but to say that a Tana replaced the word Kiddush with the word Ibur doesn't work that way. Ella, Omar Rava, Kiddush b'yom Ibur b'shloisha. So Rava says, no, what the Mishnah means is, yes, to be Mekadesh on the day of Ibur, where the previous month was 29 and Beis Din sits on the 30th, to say the previous month was Chaser and today the 30th is Rosh Chodesh, that needs a Beis Din of three. So in other words, when it said Ibur, it means Kiddush on the day of Ibur. So that's not a problem. That's Chsuri Mechsera, and the Mishnah can be construed that way. The point is, in other words, Rava says that the Mishnah is implying Acha Ibur like a Kiddush. However, the implication is that after a 30-day month, we don't need Kiddush HaChodesh. We don't need them to sit on the 31st and say that that today is Rosh Chodesh and yesterday was the 30th of the previous month. We don't need that because by default, anyway, it's 30 months. Umani Rabbi Elazar ben Tzaddik, Rabbi Tzaddik, it's really supposed to say. Namely, our Mishnah, therefore, would go according to the opinion of Rabbi Elazar ben Tzaddik, Ditnan, namely, we learn in a Mishnah in Rosh Hashanah. The Mishnah says over there, according to the Tanakhama, that regardless, whether it was a 29 or a 30-day month, always based in has to say Mekodesh HaChodesh, but Rabbi Elazar ben Tzaddik disagrees. Rabbi Elazar ben Tzaddik Aimeim Lo Nira Bizmanai, if the moon was not visible in its proper time, meaning after the 29th, in Mekadshinoise, Beis Din does not need to declare on the 31st that it's Rosh Chodesh, Shekvar Kidshu Bashamayim, because they were already Mekadosh it in Shamayim. By default, it's a 30-day month, and the Beis Din Shamayla was already Mekadosh it yesterday. Which is why Shabbos Vochem Tishrei, that Hashem is Mekadosh, the Chodesh, not Mekadosh, but Hashem is benching the Chodesh in advance. Here we're talking about being Mekadosh the Chodesh. Tosfos actually quotes from Rashi on Masechta Rosh Hashanah in the relevant sugya, that what it means is on the 30th day the Beis Din Shamayla is waiting on the Beis Din Shamata to see what are they going to decide. Are they going to decide that this is a 29-day month, or are they going to decide it's a 30-day month? On the 31st day, it's not necessary, because once it's automatically a 30-day month, therefore the Beis Din Shamayim is automatically Mekadesh it. In fact, the Yerushalmi brings in this an interesting idea when it comes to Rosh Hashanah. Hashem tells the Malachim on the 30th day of Elul, which would be if it's 29-day Elul, then the next day is Rosh Hashanah. Hashem says to the Malachim, set up the courtroom in the Beis Din Shamayla. We're getting ready to judge. It's Rosh Hashanah. Then if the Beis Din Shamata says, you know what, this year actually we need a 30-day Elul in order to avoid Yauki or Mesio or whatever the issue is, then Hashem says to the Malachim, take it all down. Take apart the courtroom. We'll bring it back together. We're not sitting in session today. We're going to sit in session tomorrow because we go according to the Beis Din on earth. Anyway, so the point is, so Rava is saying our Mishnah, by saying Ibur HaChodesh, is implying it means the Kiddush when on the day of Ibur, namely on the 30th day, which would have been the 30th of the previous month, had the moon not been visible, or had Beis Din decided that we need a 30-day month. Because now the point being, in other words, that the Mishnah is implying that only on the 30th does Beis Din need to say Mekodesh, but on the 31st they do not, because automatically it's going to be Mekodesh anyway. Namely, therefore, our Mishnah follows the opinion of Rabbi Elazar ben Tzaddik. Rabbi Nachman Omar. Rabbi Nachman says a different answer, a different way to explain the wording of the Mishnah. Kiddush achar ibur b'shloisha. On the contrary, the Mishnah means when they're Mekadesh after the ibur on the 31st day, then that requires three dayonim. B'yom Ibur like a Kiddush, implying though that if it's on the 30th day, we don't need them to be Mekadesh. And that would be Umani Plimoyi. Namely, then our Mishnah would be according to the opinion of Plimoy, who says exactly the opposite of Rabbi Elazar ben Tzaddik. The Tanya, we learn in a Braisa, Plimoy Omer, Bizmanoi ein Mekadshinoi say. Plimoy says, Fakert, when Rosh Chodesh is on the 30th, we do not need to be Mekadesh it. Because then, not automatically, but fakir. Usually, typically, a month is going to be 29 days, and therefore, when Rosh Chodesh is on the 30th, we don't need to be mechazik it by saying today is Rosh Chodesh. But he says, "Shaloi when based in when Rosh Chodesh is on the 31st day, then Plimoy says we need to be mechazik it because we're talking about. In other words, Rashi describes what we're talking about is when the moon was in fact visible on the night after the 29th, but based in decided because of then based in decided because of Yaukio Maceo or whatever to push off Rosh Chodesh for one day. Plimoy says that's when they need to be mechadish on the 31st. But if they decided, you know what, we're not worried about Yaki or Mesia, we're just going to do a regular 29-day month, then Plymouth says they don't have to be Mekadosh. Because by default, we're going to assume it's Mekodesh. The moon was visible last night and Adam came.
But according to me, it sounds like every Chodesh has 29 days.
No, not that every Chodesh has 29 days, but when the moon was visible on the night after the 29th, then we don't need, he says we don't need to be Mekadosh the next day because automatically we would assume that that it's Mekodesh. Because one, it was visible and Adam came. But when he says when Beis Din has to delay Rosh Chodesh by one day, that's when they need to be Mekadesh it. So therefore, sort of Nachman says our Mishnah would be implying, according to the opinion of Plimoy, what do we mean Ibra Chodesh? We mean when they're Mekadesh the Chodesh on the day after the Ibur, namely on the 31st day. So they're saying last month was 30 days. That's when they would actually need to say Mekodesh HaChodesh to reinforce the point that even though the moon would have been, even though the moon was visible 2 nights ago and yesterday should have been Rosh Chodesh, nevertheless, we're not doing that. We're making Rosh Chodesh today instead.
So it should be 3 days, right? Could be either
20, no, Rosh Chodesh,
30 or 31.
No, Rosh Chodesh can only be the 30th or the 31st. Either the moon is visible the night after the 29th, and then Rosh Chodesh is on, and then other things being equal, Rosh Chodesh is going to be the 30th, or the moon was not visible on the night after the 29th, and then the month is going to be 30 days, and Rosh Chodesh will be on the 31st, which is the first of the next month. What we're saying over here, Plimoy is saying that you can have all this time in the sugya, we've been saying there can be a case. From the astronomical point of view, the moon was visible on the night after the 29th, and maybe even Adam are ready to come and say that they saw it. But Beis Din has reasons to push off Rosh Chodesh by one day, namely to avoid problems as far as Yom Kippur being next to Shabbos or other considerations like that. So now in the Mishnah in Rosh Hashanah, Rabbi Elazar, Rabbi Tzadik had said that when Rosh Chodesh is a day later, you don't need to be Mekadesh at Shekrakid Shur Shemayim. The month can't be more than 30 days long. So it's not necessary to be Mekadesh on the 31st and say that the 30th was the last day of the previous month. Plimo is saying the other way around. In that case is when you do need to be Mekadesh to reinforce the point. Even though the moon was visible on the night after the 29th and we should have declared Rosh Chodesh on the 30th, nevertheless, we're not doing that. We're saying Rosh Chodesh is on the 31st.
Because of
these concerns about Yom Kippur or other things like that. Yeah. Okay. So anyway, so Rav Nachman says that our Mishnah is implying according to that opinion. Rav Ashi, Amala Ulam Chishuv Katani, Rav Ashi says another answer, that our Mishnah is in fact talking about the calculations. Or my Iber, what does the Mishnah mean when it uses the word Iber? It means Chishuv de Iber, the calculations of whether they need to be Ma'aber the Chodesh. Namely, in other words, again, they need to calculate how many chadoshim malayim did we have this year? Can we afford to make another one without knocking the calendar out of whack, without getting it that the moon is going to be visible before the night of the 29th, which we want to avoid. So it uses the word ibur, meaning chishuv de ibur, the calculation of the ibur. Va'aydi de kabor lemisni ibur hashana, because the Mishnah is going to go on to mention ibur hashana, which is declaring that there's going to be an extra month in the year. Tananami ibur hachodesh. Therefore, the Mishnah uses the word ibur hachodesh because to be consistent, to use the word ibur for both of them. But in fact, Rav Ashi is saying we're not talking about the ibur itself. It's true we don't necessarily need. Our Tana actually might hold that Beis Din never needs to declare Mekodesh HaChodesh. The Gemara in Rosh Hashanah presents, and the Gemara is going to bring later on in our Sugya, there's actually a four-way machlokas when Beis Din needs to be Mekodesh HaChodesh. Always, never, only when it's a Chodesh Choser, or only when it's a Chodesh Malay. So now Rav Ashi is saying our Mishnah can be implying, according to the opinion, that you never need to be Mekadesh L'Chodesh. However, when it says Ibur, actually means the calculations to decide whether we're going to have a 30-day month. So Rav Ashi says that's what it means. The word ibur over here just means whether we have to, where we're going to calculate whether we're going to need a 30-day month, whether we have to be concerned about Yom Kippur falling out too close to Shabbos, etc. But and can we afford to do that? Have we had few enough chadashim maleim this year that we can afford to do that? But it doesn't mean the actual kiddush itself, because the actual kiddush itself, Rav Ashi says, our Tana of our Mishnah would be going according to the opinion that Beis Din never needs to be mekadesh to chodesh. They just need to listen to the edim and see what they have to say. They don't need to make a declaration afterwards. Tosfos actually brings an explanation from Rashi, which is not in front of us in Rashi, so it must have been from a different version of Rashi or something, that we're talking about Ibur, when we say Ibur Shana, we mean, in other words, that they have to declare that the new Adar is going to be Adar, the second Adar is going to be Adar. They have to declare this second month is another Adar rather than Nisan. And Tosfos discusses that. And says that no, what it means is when the panel of Beis Din decides this month needs to be an Ibur year, and then so then automatically the new month will be Adar Sheni. So that's what we mean by Ibur, and that's what we mean by Chishuv de Ibur. Means the calculations ahead of time. Are we going to need a second Adar this year? Okay. So the Gemara points out, according to Rav Ashi, Chishuv Chodesh Ein, Kiddush Chodesh Loi. So it comes out, according to Rav Ashi's understanding of the Mishnah, that we need three in order to calculate whether we need a 30-day month or not. Kiddush Chodesh Loi, namely, according to Rav Ashi, we don't need Beis Din to ever actually say Mekodesh HaChodesh. Mani Rabbi Eliezer hi. In which case, our Mishnah would be according to Rabbi Eliezer. The Tanya, Rabbi Eliezer Omer, Bein Bizmane, Bein Shaloi Bizmane, whether the moon was visible in its time after the 29th or not, Ein Mekadesh Noise, you do not need to be Mekadesh. You don't need to say Mekodesh HaChodesh for it to be Rosh Chodesh. Shenemar, because the Pasuk says, V'kidashtim es shnasa chamishim shana. The Pasuk says that Beis Din should declare the 50th year holy as Yovel, implying shonim at mekadesh, v'yat mekadesh chadoshim. You need to declare a year holy to say that this year is Yovel. You don't need to declare a month holy to say that this day is Rosh Chodesh. So Rabbi Eliezer says you never need to say it, whether it was a 29 or a 30-day month. Beis Din just has to hear the Edom out and say, okay, we accept you Edos, or we reject you Edos, as the case may be. But not to actually say Mekodesh HaChodesh. So therefore, Rav Ashi is saying that is implied in the wording of our Mishnah when it says Ibur HaChodesh, means the calculations. Do we need a 30-day month this month? But not that they actually have to say Mekodesh. The Mishnah had gone on to say, Rabbi Shimon Gamliel Omer B'Shloi Shacholer. Rabbi Shimon Gamliel had said that when it comes to declaring an Ibur Yer, you start with three, then you continue with five, and you finish off with seven. So the Gemara says, Tanya, Ketzid Omer Rabbi Shimon Gamliel B'Shloi Shemaschilim Ovachamisha Noisin V'Noisin V'Gomim B'Shiva. What does Rabbi Shimon Gamliel mean by that? How does this work? So it's like this. Suppose to begin with, we have a panel of three gets together. We have to figure out whether we're going to sit down. We're going to decide whether this next year is an Ibur year. Suppose that one of them says, you know, we should sit and we should start determining it. And two of them say, nah, it's not even necessary. We know there's no need for an Ibur year this coming year. Later on, we're going to learn in more detail on Daf Yud Beis. In particular, we're going to talk about the factors that they use to determine whether we need an Ibur Yer. So now, if out of the original three who get together to talk about it, if two of them say we don't even need to sit and discuss it, there's no question we don't need an Ibur Yer. The Tkufa will be late enough, or whatever the details are exactly, and we don't need it. So then, Botel Yochid B'Miyotay, then that Yochid is Botel because he's the Miyot, he's the minority, and therefore we don't B'chlal sit at all to even discuss the point. We just say, fine, there's no Ibur Yer this year, and they go their ways. On the other hand, Shnayim Omrim Leishiv, Echad Omer Shaloi Leishiv, on the other hand, if two of them say, you know, we should sit and we should discuss it, and one of them says that we should not, then we have a majority that says we need to discuss it. Now at this point, Rav Shimon Gamliel says Moisifin Alayim Oid Shnayim. Then we add another two v'noisin medaver, and we start discussing the point.
So there was even though.
No, that's because we started with three, so we add two more. We're still on an odd number. Now, there is a machloikas who's showing him what happens if all three of them unanimously agreed to begin with. We do have to sit down and figure it out. Can they finish it off with three or not, or do they still need to add the two more? But here the Gemara is saying that if they had a disagreement, we definitely need to add two more. So that's what Rav Shimon Gamliel says when he says, B'shlosh maschilin, we start with three, means we have three to b'chlal start determining, do we even need to decide, to deliberate whether there's going to be an Ibuyoro this coming year. Then based on that, we add another two to actually sit and discuss the details of it, to figure out the particular factors that are involved and figure out based on those factors whether we need an Ibuyoro. And again, on Daf Yud Beis, we're going to discuss in detail those various factors. So then at that point, Shneim, if two of them say we do need the next year to be an Ibuyoro based on the various criteria, and three of them say we do not, then at that point we stop over there, Botlo Shneim and Miyotan, the two are outvoted and there's no Ibuyoro the coming year. If three of them say we need it to be an Ibuyoro based on the criteria, and two of them say we do not, then then we add another two, and we have seven. So we have not less than seven. So in other words, that's what Rav Shimon Gamliel says. In other words, there's three stages over here. The stage of determining, do we b'chol need to even have a discussion? Having had the discussion, do we need an Ibuyor or not? And then to actually declare the Ibuyor. So therefore, that's why we have the three, five, and seven. Well, the Gemara says, Hani shloisha chamisha v'shiva k'neged mi. Well, why dafka those numbers, three, five, and seven? So, Pligibur Rabbi Yitzchak ben Achmeni v'chad de'imei, Rabbi Yitzchak ben Achmeni and another Talmud Chacham with him argued. And the Gemara says, Umanu, who would that one with him be? Rabbi Shimon ben Pazi. V'amilah, others say the other way around, Rabbi Shimon ben Pazi v'chad de'imei, Umanu Rabbi Yitzchak ben Achmeni. So they both agree it was the same Chachamim, but the question is which one is the more important and which one was the less important one. Anyway, so the two Chachamim argued what the three, five, and seven are based on. Chad Omar, Keneged Birkas Koyanim. One of them says it corresponds to Birkas Koyanim. Now, what does Birkas Koyanim have to do with declaring whether it's an Ibuyor or not? So Maharsha gives a long detailed explanation over here that the 60 letters of Birkas Koyanim represent the Sanhedrin. We had a few blot to go. We had the expression Shishim Giborim Saviv Law refers to 60 members of the Sanhedrin, and they have another 11. And then you have that, so therefore Birkas Koyanim has a connection to the Sanhedrin. And he goes on to explain that you have those various things where we learned before. We learned in the Agadah about Dayanim. We had, for example, Rav was saying that, look, I stand to lose out money from being a Dayan. I might conceivably end up having to pay out. I might be harassed by a powerful person who's gonna make me lose money because I decided against him or whatever. So corresponding to that, we have the Bracha Yivarecha Hashem V'Yishmerecha in Birkas Koyanim. And Hashem will bless you and protect your wealth. And then he goes on to explain, similarly, the Yor Hashem Panevelecha Vichuneka has to do with another reason why we might, that later on, the Gemara is going to describe one of the considerations that will make us determine whether we need an Ibuyor is whether the grain is ripe enough and whether we have to be concerned about making an extra month where people are going to be also in Chodesh. So Hashem will protect you, Yor Hashem Panevelecha, and Hashem will give you rain, and there won't be a famine, and therefore you'll be able to declare an Ibuyor and not have to worry that people have to wait another month to eat Chodosh. And the same thing with the rest of it. So each posuk in Birkas Koyanim has to do with one of the details about why they would or wouldn't declare of why they would or wouldn't declare a leap year. And then there are some other interesting explanations as well what Birkas Koyanim has to do. The Yad Ramah in particular explains that he says that Birkas Koyanim and making an Ibuyor show how much Hashem loves the Jewish people. Like this with Birkas Koyanim, Hashem gives it to us as three separate brachas, and each one getting longer and longer to show how much he loves us. And the fact that Hashem made the year with all the Yom Tovim is also that Hashem gave us, that Hashem wanted to give us many mitzvahs and many Yom Tovim, and therefore, and we represent that by having an Ibuyor sometimes to keep the Yom Tovim in those seasons, and therefore there is a connection between them. And then there were other explanations as well. Anyway, so that's one explanation. V'chad Omar, the other one says, Shloisha keneged Shomer Asaf. The fact that we start out with three corresponds to a pasuk that mentions three Shomer Asaf, three guards of the, when it comes to Tzidkiyahu, the last king of Yehuda, it mentions among the people who were arrested by Nebuzaradan and taken to be executed were Shloisha Shomer Asaf, three people who guarded the doorpost, meaning, in other words, three of his ministers. So therefore, we start out with three. Chamisha mei roye pnei melech, shiva roye pnei melech. And then we have five of those who see the king's face, meaning his close advisors, and seven the king's close advisors. So the five are also mentioned in the psukim over there involving Tzidkiyahu. The seven, Rashi says, means the seven advisors of Achashverosh. Tosafot says, why are we basing it on the number of advisors of a Goyish king? Tosafot says that no, what it is at the end of Malachim, at the end of Yom Yohu, when it describes the events of the Churban, so it meant it describes them in more or less the same words, but there are some differences between them. One of them is that in Malachim, it mentions there were five Meiroye Pnei HaMelech who were arrested and taken to be executed, and in Yom Yohu, in the same passage, it says there were seven Roye Pnei HaMelech. So, and Tosfos brings from the Yerushalmi that it means that these all refer to members of the Sanhedrin, and it means there were five who were actually members of the Sanhedrin. The other two that make up seven were actually the Sofrei HaDayanim, the scribes who record what's going on in Beis Din. The point is, therefore, the three, five, and seven are all various groups of people from the members of the Sanhedrin who were taken to be executed. But the point is, we see that Tzidkiyahu had three on one level, five on another level, seven on another level, members of his cabinet, basically members of the Sanhedrin, who are one of their roles is as the king's cabinet. So therefore, corresponding to that is why we have three, five, and seven when it comes to Ibra Hashanah. And the Gemara says, in fact, Toni Rabbi Yosef. Rabbi Yosef taught a Braisa that says exactly that. Ani chamisha shloisha v'chamisha v'shiva shloisha k'neged shrei min asaf chamisha mirei p'nei melech shiva roi p'nei melech. So the same thing as that explanation. Omele Abaya Rabbi Yosef. So Abaya asked Rabbi Yosef, ad ha'idna mai taima lo poroshlon mar hochi. Why is it, Rebbe, that you never explained that to us until now, the reason for the three, five, and seven? Omele hu, so Rabbi Yosef tells them, lo ha'yavad yadayna ditzrichitu. I didn't know you needed. I thought you had figured this out by yourselves. Mi b'itim minayim milsev lo amri l'chu. Have you ever asked me something and I didn't respond? So if you had asked me, I would have told you a long time ago, but you didn't ask, so I figured you knew it already. But that's so that's that, and then you have also the reason with Birkas Koyanim. The Ran brings something over here from the Yerushalmi, Yovei Gahaz V'Yavato Gahaz. Another way of looking at it is the 3, 5, and 7 may be similar to what Rashi is saying. We're talking about the number of ministers that Goyish kings have. We're saying the 3, 5, and 7 number of Dayanim who are going to declare whether there's going to be an Ibrayer, they help be Mevatel, the Xerus that would be coming from those 3, 5, or 7 ministers of Goyish kings who would want to harass the Jewish people, and Hashem protects us from their Xerus and from their schemes in the source of the 3, 5, and 7 Dayanim who sit to decide and then to declare an Ibuyar.
Sure.
Okay.